Hello and welcome to Hey, Remember the 80s? I'm Joe.
And I'm Carrie.
Remember, we're not professional podcasters or music critics. We're just waving to the girls, feeling out of sight, and talking about 80s music.
Yeah. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Welcome to you.
And welcome to you. It's so nice. And welcome to any new listeners and loyal listeners. We found some out in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, Van Vleck, Texas, and Cochabamba, Bolivia. Wow.
That sounds like a real fun place to go.
Oh, yeah. I want to go.
Go to Cochabamba and Cocha my Bamba.
Oh.
Okay. Everyone, look on Facebook, facebook.com/HRT80S. Also, sometimes Blue Sky. All right. That's that. Tidbits.
We've got some.
We do. And I will tell you that friend of the podcast, Peter, tried to scoop me with this first tidbit, and I told him, ha, 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 I already heard about this, Peter.
Nice try, Peter. You got to wake up pretty early in the morning if you want to scoop Carrie. Me, on the other hand, I get up a little bit later, so this is news to me.
No, Peter knows I really appreciate sending us tips about documentaries and other things. I really appreciate it. But I had heard this one prior to his tip coming in. There was a Luther Vandross documentary that premiered at Sundance. It's titled Luther, Never Too Much, and there wasn't a whole lot of information about it. Hopefully it went over well, but as of right now, it's unknown if or when it will appear in theaters or on streaming. It didn't see it on the list of movies that had been sold out of Sundance, so I don't know.
I almost feel like when these documentaries premiere at a film festival, it's like, good luck everyone who's not going. You might get to see it.
I know, it's funny. I'm trying to remember, the Go-Go's didn't premiere at a festival, did it?
It have. I don't know. Yeah, I think it might have.
So long ago. Sometimes there's a real buzz around things, and then I had not heard a single thing about this, and then suddenly there was an article that was just talking about it pretty briefly. There's so many documentaries, but some of them don't find their way to us. Like, we're still waiting on that Cindy documentary.
Cindy, yeah, that's the one I'm really waiting for. In The Simple Minds.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We gotta start keeping, like, a list.
Spreadsheet. That's all you, sis. You love the spreadsheets.
Yes. Well, we gotta keep following up and Googling and stuff, because I feel like I forget about them, and then who knows where they end up.
There's another one, too. It's called Thank You, Good Night. The Bon Jovi Story, a four-part docuseries. And this one, Carrie, it's confirmed coming to Hulu. So we can watch it and talk about it. And they've got full cooperation of all members and will include personal videos and photos. That premieres April 26th. I bet there will be a lot leading up to that. Appearances, songs, probably. Yeah.
One of the articles that talked about this, which I did not read, I just saw the headline, said that there was something about Richie Sambora.
Sambora, yeah.
Reunion. So I think the classic lineup is going to get back together probably and do something.
I'd watch it. I would.
Yeah, I would definitely watch it. I'm not such a huge fan of Bon Jovi, but I think their story is interesting. I'll be interested to hear more about what they went through and all that.
Mm-hmm. Same. And this last tidbit's all you, sis.
I was excited to see that there is a new Billy Joel single coming out February 1st. It's called Turn the Lights Back On, and it is his first new single since 2007. And he's also going to perform at the Grammys on February 4th.
Oh my gosh.
Billy Joel Renaissance.
Could this be the first time Carrie watches the Grammys willingly in the last 20 years?
I know, for
Tune
real.
Tune in and find out.
Well, I'm going to DVR it and fast forward to his part.
It's all we can ask for.
I watched recently where Pink was involved. Was that a tribute to Olivia Newton-John?
Yeah, I think that was the American Music Awards.
You're right. So yeah, I can't remember last time I watched the Grammys. Any more tidbits, Joe? Last call for tidbits.
No, I think that's all we got.
Okay. Well, then let's move into our main segment, which is a return to that list of the best pop songs never to hit the Hot 100. This was decided by Billboard. We talked about it first in episode 233. And today we're going to talk about some more of those songs from the 80s decade that made it onto the list. Remember, this was a subjective list, and the Billboard staff described pop as catchy, tight, rousing, emotional, immaculately crafted, instantly memorable. And here are some of the reasons they gave for why these songs missed the Hot 100. Some were ahead of their time. Some made their impact just below the surface of the mainstream. Some wouldn't make their biggest impact until many decades later. And some of them were just a little too challenging or a little too body for a true pop embrace.
Well, let's get into number 83 on the list. And that's a song called Teardrops by Womack and Womack. I brought this one as a song that time forgot way back in episode 109. Unfortunately, we're going to have to get into the gross backstory of this duo. We'll get it out of the way so we can focus on the song. Womack and Womack are Bobby and Linda. Bobby was a protege of Sam Cooke. After Sam died, Bobby married Sam's widow and became the stepfather to Linda Cooke, who was Sam's daughter. After his marriage to Sam's widow ended, Bobby married Linda. Oh.
Not good.
And now on to the song, which was from the duo's fourth album and was released in 1988. And here's a clip. It was a huge hit overseas, making it to number 3 in the UK and topping the charts in Belgium and the Netherlands. It didn't chart at all in the US, not even on the R&B chart, where these two actually had only one top 40 hit in their career. Billboard says of this song, "Few late 80s hits were as relentless in their barrage of hooks as Teardrops, one of the original crying on the dance floor classics." This album by Womack and Womack was produced by Chris Blackwell, who was the founder of Island Records and responsible for introducing Bob Marley and the Wailers to international audiences.
So, Joe, yes, this was a song that time forgot from you. So I guess we know how you feel about it.
Oh, yeah. And I would even say, I brought this up to Dave when it came on the other day. I was like, you know, I didn't need this on the playlist. I probably hear it in my house, I would say, once a week since that
really?
Episode. Hear it all the time. Yeah, I put it on playlist, but it's also on my Apple Music station.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
This is one that I liked it when you first talked about it. It's one of the videos that always gets played on that.
Some random guy.
No, on that crazy video channel up at my
parents' house. Yes. Oh, that's hilarious.
So I've seen the video a bunch of times. But I really slept on it because, like, I did like it when you brought it, but I didn't put it on any playlists or anything. And so when I heard it again this week, I was like, oh my God, I got to make sure I add this to my library and will hopefully start showing up on my Apple Music station and all that. It's so fresh. Like, it doesn't sound like any other sort of dance music of the time. Like, it's really,
agreed.
Yeah, like soul influenced and just a great one. I really love it.
And I didn't go back and listen to the episode where we talked about it, but I'm sure I brought this up. But it reminds me and Dave of the Fergie song, Glamorous, where she's like, first class.
Oh, yes. You're right. You're right.
Footsteps, 100%. Dun, dun, dun. Remind me, baby, of you. Dee-dee-dee. Dee-dee-dee.
Well, number 78 on this list is The Glow of Love by Change. This is probably known to most general music fans as the song that provided the beat for Janet Jackson's number one song, All For You. It was the third single released from Change's debut album. The first, A Lover's Holiday, had reached number 40 on the Hot 100 and 4 R&B. This song, along with A Lover's Holiday and the second single, was a number one dance hit for 9 weeks in the summer of 1980.
Summer hit. Good for them.
Remember how multiple tracks from an album were lumped together on the dance chart? That was the case there. And this song also made it to 29 on the R&B chart.
Flowers bloom in morning dew, and the beauty seems to say, it's a pleasure when you treasure all that's new and true and gay. Easy
living and we're giving what we know we're dreaming of. We are one, having fun, walking in the glow of love.
That is Luther Vandross singing. The other lead singer for the group at this time was Jocelyn Shaw, aka Brown.
Wow.
Yeah. She has a very interesting story we covered in episode 226. And Billboard calls this song an absolutely incandescent dance pop gem, but notes that as the third single from the album and with disco fading, it's no surprise this single did not make a pop impact. I haven't heard A Lover's Holiday in a long time, but I have a memory of it. And I can't believe that that one was the one that snuck into the top 40 and not this one. But maybe I'm being revisionist because it does have, you know,
All For You.
Yes. And like, yeah, it's hard to believe that this wasn't a big hit at the time because Janet turned it into such a classic. I'm a little surprised that this one wasn't a pop hit for change, especially with Luther's beautiful vocals.
Oh, yeah, he kills it on this song for sure. I might like A Lover's Holiday better. But I don't want to diminish how I feel about this song. Yeah. I really do love it. I do. But now when I hear Change, I think of how Charlie talks about how they were a Chic ripoff.
Oh,
it's a bit on the nose, right? Like, I think that's true.
That's probably true. But at the same time, there were so many groups like that. I mean, you know, Chic was definitely the best and the most influential, but there were a lot of groups that were ripping off Chic in the 70s and early 80s.
Yeah. Well, next up is Mad World by Tears for Fears. It's number 75. And we talked about this song, too, briefly way back in episode 6. God, we were just babies.
I know.
That was in the context of its resurgence in pop culture as a result of a cover by Gary Jules that was on the Donnie Darko soundtrack, and that made it to number one in the UK. The original was released in late 1982, even before Tears for Fears' debut album had hit stores. Their first two singles had failed to chart, but Mad World made it all the way to number three in the UK. Roland Orzabal wanted to write a new wave song like Duran Duran's Girls on Film. He originally sang lead, but after hearing Kurt Smith sing it instead, he knew Kurt was the better choice. Kurt ad-libbed a line towards the end of the song, which was an inside joke. So producers Chris Hughes and Ross Cullum had invented an imaginary planet called Halarge, and Kurt's reference to a Halargian world was a joke that ended up staying in the song. So funny. In the early days of the 2020 quarantine, Kurt and his daughter Diva uploaded a video of them performing an acoustic version of Mad World, which ended up going viral.
And their tears are filling up their glasses. No expression, no expression. Have my head, I want to drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow. And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had.
The song never charted in the U.S., and the duo didn't become stateside superstars until a couple years later.
It's hard to believe that this song never charted because it has become, I would call it a classic. I mean, you know?
Yep, 100%.
This will get played on regular 80s stations sometimes, I feel like.
First wave, yeah, for sure, for sure,
yeah. But I really love it. It's a classic for a reason. I love Tears for Fears. It's a good one, for sure.
I mean, in terms of it making the list, like the criteria they stated, yeah, it didn't get the cachet until decades later and definitely fits this one.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch the video of him and his daughter performing?
A little bit, yeah.
I've said many times before, I love it when parents and children perform together. And I don't know if she's a singer like Dave Stewart's daughter or if she's just noodling around with her dad.
She's got the name for it if she wants to become a singing superstar.
That's true. It is a unique name. I don't know that I would name my daughter Diva, but I'm sure she owns it. Okay. Between the Sheets by the Isley Brothers was ranked number 71 by the Billboard writers. I could have sworn we talked about this song before, but I guess I was mistaken.
We've talked about Caravan of Love, right? Or was that Isley something Isley? What was that? Remember that?
Yeah,
that
that's weird. Isley, Jasper Isley.
Okay, got it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We did talk about the Isley Brothers in a Billboard flashback where they had a new song hitting the R&B charts, but I guess it's just that this one is, yes, so iconic. I thought, of course, we must have talked about it. The Isley Brothers are R&B superstars. Between the Sheets is the title song to their 22nd album. Just missed the Hot 100, peaking at number one on the Bubbling Under chart. But it did become their 23rd top 10 hit on the R&B chart, peaking at number 3. In total, the brothers would have 71 charting R&B singles in their career. I mean, mind-blowing.
I know.
Billboard says of this one, if Smokey Robinson didn't already give them a name for the Quiet Storm radio format, Between the Sheets probably would have worked just as well.
Oh my God.
With an R&B slow jam, even more sublimely squalling and just as enduring. And the song has endured as a sample as well, most famously on Notorious B.I.G.'s 1994 hit Big Papa.
Jump in the Rover and come over, tell your friends, jump in the GM3. I got the chronic by the truth. I love it when you call me Big Papa. Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
I
love it when you call me
Big Papa. I don't think Between the Sheets rolls off the tongue the way Quiet Storm does.
It still works. It fits.
I would love to hear a radio DJ being like, it's time for Between the Sheets.
I'm here to tell you, I'm sure it happened.
That's
has happened, yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, Big Papa is probably the most famous one, but I mean, you can't forget Functified by DeBrat, Luxurious by Gwen Stefani, not to be confused with Glamorous by Fergie. Oh, did you ever see Poetic Justice?
No, I did not.
It's one of my favorites from the 90s. You should really watch it. There's a scene where it's they play Between the Sheets, and then it segues into a remix of Bonita Applebaum by Tribe Called Quest that uses the music.
Wow.
I mean, they stay paid for this one.
I'm sure. Well, there's a huge list on the Wikipedia page, including their One of Those Days by Whitney Houston.
Is that a later hit?
2002, yeah.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, people are still using this. I mean, the latest sample was from 2019 and our buddy Doja Cat. But yeah, I mean, it's a great song. I need to come up with a word for this experience, but that whole thing that we've talked about where it's like, because I know this beat from Big Papa, I would usually be like, it doesn't seem right, but this seems right. The original, when you hear the original, you're like, okay, this is what this is meant to be. And Biggie did a good thing with it, but I'm happy to hear the original for sure.
Okay, so let's come up with a term for it then, or ask the listeners to help. When you know a song or you know a beat because of a more recent song, but the 80s version is the better version.
Old school. Something old school. Yeah.
Well, the ubiquitousness of 80s songs on this list continues at number 70 with Pink Cadillac by Bruce Springsteen. The song started its life in 1981 when Bruce wrote the music and added lyrics for a song called Love is a Dangerous Thing. After switching up the lyrics to be about the titular pink Cadillac, he recorded an acoustic version in 82 during the sessions for Nebraska, but it was not formally recorded until he was working on Born in the USA. And even then, it was very spontaneous. Bruce recorded a basic track of him playing guitar and singing at the end of the day after most of the crew had left the studio. The E Street Band had to record their parts the next morning. But the song didn't make the album. It was replaced by I'm Going Down. The song was used as the B-side to Dancing in the Dark and became a crowd favorite on the Born in the USA tour. The song became known to a wider audience when Natalie Cole covered it in 88, and her version made it to number 5 on the Hot 100, number 9 R&B, and number 16 Adult Contemporary. But it wasn't done yet. There was also a remix done by David Cole and Robert Clavillis, later to be known as CNC Music Factory, that topped the dance chart.
That dance remix is really wild, and it's super funny to think of Bruce Springsteen writing this song that is so twangy and honky-tonk. It was inspired by Elvis, I guess, and just all of this very down-home kind of stuff, and then somehow, some way, it got transformed into this loopy-doopy dance song.
That went to number one on the dance chart.
Exactly.
Huh? It's a mad world.
Very true. But let's talk about Bruce's version for a minute. I have never liked this song, and I'll tell you why. Because it was one of my dad's favorites
that
he would play over and over and over again. Yes. And I found it really interesting to read that, you know, he recorded this very spontaneously. And I genuinely want to know if he even re-recorded the vocals, because the vocals to me sound so strange.
Unfinished, hurry.
Yeah. Extremely twangy, almost like he's putting on. I just can't believe that this is what he really intended for the song. I mean, there's got to be some twang to it, but it was extreme. So that's why I'm curious if this was the original vocal or what, but it's fine. And I don't even really like Natalie Cole's version all that much better. I guess I just don't like the song.
I wonder if you could draw a line from his writing this song to him writing Cover Me for Donna Summer. Do you think, like, in the back of his mind, he's like, would this work for a dance diva?
Maybe. There was a brief citation needed on the Wikipedia page, but it said something along the lines of Bette Midler wanted to sing it and he wouldn't give it to her. So I don't know what it was that convinced him to give it to Natalie Cole.
Let me tell you about my recent trip to Mexico with, there were maybe, what, 10 to 12 gays on this trip?
Yeah.
And we had to listen to the new Ariana Grande single, Yes And.
Okay.
And I forgot to ask you, how many times have you listened to it?
Oh, not many. The first day that it came out, I probably listened to it 2 or 3 times. And I don't think I've listened to it since, honestly. So.
Well, I'm going to need you to listen to it ASAP, because the first thing that my friend Kyle said when we heard it, he goes, doesn't her singing the verses kind of sound like Pink Cadillac by Natalie Cole?
Oh my God.
So we did a comparison and we were like, oh my God, yes, for sure.
Wow. Okay. I cannot wait. I cannot wait now to listen to this. Da, 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 da. You never gave me your review of the song as a whole.
I need another week to live with it.
Okay. I thought you heard it so many times in Mexico, you would have formed an opinion.
Well, memories are hazy.
Understood. Understood. Yeah. Next on the list at 69.
Nice.
It's yet another song from the 80s. Hang On to Your Love by Sade. We have talked about the lovely and timeless icon Sade before. Joe named her as an unsung hero in episode 54. Very smart move. Sade and her band recorded their first album, Diamond Life, before they had even signed a record deal. Producer Robert Miller noted they did not use computers and instead had to painstakingly sync up the real piano and the electric piano used. Your Love is King and Smooth Operator were the first songs to chart from the album, reaching 35 and 5 on the Hot 100 respectively. Billboard speculates that Hang On to Your Love did not hit the Hot 100 because it might have been too much of a switch up from the loungier joys of those first two songs. Single peaked at 2 on the Bubbling Under chart, 14 R&B, and 5 dance.
It's loungy to me, right?
I think it's like the perfect combination of loungy and dance. And if I had been super familiar with Sade at the time and heard Your Love is King and Smooth Operator, and then her next single came out and it was this, and she was showing me that she could do something even more upbeat and jazzy, I would have been like, wow, this is amazing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bummer that this one didn't catch on. And literally listening to it this week, every time it came on, I was just like, oh, man, this is so good. I haven't heard this one very often at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I listen to this one a lot. I love it. I like that a lot of her music from that album is like you would play it and then stare longingly out of a window.
Very good. Very good.
Like who else can say that their music is good for that, right?
Yeah.
It's unique.
This is another thing that I should put on my spreadsheet of things to follow up on. We still haven't heard anything about this new music that she is supposedly doing.
Recording. Yeah.
Also, haven't heard anything about a documentary about Sade, but I would love to know more about her.
Oh, yeah. That would be great. Well, Carrie, that is where we're stopping at today, and we've still got a long way to go. And also, there were a bunch of songs in this portion of the list that we covered today that we've talked about on the podcast before, like Freaks Come Out at Night by Houdini, Nasty Girl by Vanity Six, and your dad's all-time favorite song, Strokin' by Clarence Carter.
Indeed. I mean, this list is all over the place. This would be, you know, I was just going to say this would be fun to make a playlist, but I don't need to do that because our lovely friend of the podcast, Michael, actually did that for us when we first talked about this. Well, Joe, that is not it for the episode,
Are you sure?
though.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't thought it was.
No, I think it might be time for a quiz.
Oh, no, I'm not ready. Just kidding. I've been taking my vitamins every day. I gotta do better.
Let me give you a preview. We have 11 points available today, and I got 8 out of those 11.
Okay, so there's hope for me.
You can make up some ground potentially, but I will tell you
that. You don't think I will. You're going to say what? They're hard?
I mean, some of them are kind of obscure. We'll find out. It's 2 more days of quizzes from MTV The Early Years. Starting off, the following are lyrics from what song? Chains of Love Got a Hold on Me. When Passion's a Prison, You Can't Break Free.
Say it one more time.
Chains of love Got a Hold on Me. When Passion's a Prison, You Can't Break Free.
I hope this is one you got wrong. My guess is The Warrior by Scandal.
That's a good guess. I guessed We Belong because I just couldn't get there. I could tell it was like right on the tip of your tongue or the outside of your brain. You Give Love a Bad Name.
Oh, God. I did. I was thinking metal at first, too. I really was. Not that they're metal, but you know what I mean. I was thinking harder rock.
Mm-hmm. Next question. I hope you get this one. With what words did Downtown Julie Brown end every episode of Club MTV?
Wubba, wubba, wubba.
Correct. Next up is a picture question, and it is, this is a still frame from a video for what song?
Hello by Lionel Richie.
Correct.
That was a gimme.
That was very easy, yes. This is another gimme. If you tune to MTV at any time after 7 a.m. on July 13th, 1985, what telecast would you have seen?
Live Aid.
Correct.
Happy birthday to your sister.
Yes. All right, I got this next one wrong, so you have a chance. And maybe you remember this anecdote. I did not remember it, so I just had to make a guess. In 1983, funkster Rick James made the following statement. A lot of black asses are going to come together and explode on MTV. There are no blacks on MTV's program list except for blank, and she stopped being black about 10 years ago. MTV puts on little white punk groups who don't even have record deals. Blacks are missing exposure and sales. To whom is he referring?
Tina Turner.
You're right.
Yeah.
Did you remember that or did you just take a guess?
No, I absolutely do not remember that. But I was just trying to think in 83, I was like, gosh, were they showing Let's Stay Together then?
I don't remember him calling out a specific person. I, of course, remember Rick James talking about the lack of black artists on MTV, but I said Diana Ross. I was like, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad I didn't think of her because I would have said that probably.
Okay, so you got 1, 2, 3, 4 correct out of 5. And on to the next day. What did George Michael's t-shirt say in the Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go music video?
Choose life.
Correct. Joe, the next question is, this is a still frame from the video for what song?
It's Wild Wild West by Escape Club.
Correct.
Yes.
The following are lyrics from what song? When I go to get my shoes shined, I gotta take their word.
This is the stupidest guess I could ever make, okay?
Okay.
The future's so bright, I gotta wear shades.
Oh, that's not a bad guess. The answer is Fat by Weird Al.
Oh my God.
I don't know why. I did get it. I don't know why I got that.
Oh my God.
It was totally just the context clues. Like, I was like, when I go to get my shoes shined, I got to take their word. I was like, oh, what does that mean? And then it kind of clicked. So, what early MTV employee was the original McDonald's Chicken McNugget girl before working at the network?
I want to say Martha Quinn.
That's correct.
Oh, thank God.
Okay. This next question is kind of convoluted. I'm going to paste it for you so you can see it, and then I will read it. And there is a picture too, although I don't think you'll need this picture at all. I don't think you even need the second part, but I'll read the whole thing. What early 80s band featured Mike Score on lead vocals, his brother Ali on drums, and Paul Reynolds on guitar? Their first and most famous video was an homage to this album cover from Brian Eno and Robert Fripp, featuring the band performing in a room of mirrors and tinfoil.
The band featuring Mike Score on lead vocals is A Flock of Seagulls.
That is correct.
I was like, does she want me to name the album that's coming up?
No,
what's happening?
No. I had no idea, though, that that video was an homage to this album, which I've never heard.
That's cute.
Yes. Final question for today. MTV was not the only place on cable airing music videos in the early 80s. And yes, Joe, I know you didn't have cable. I didn't know the answer to this one, but maybe you do. What was the name of the music video show on Superstation WTBS?
Hot Tracks.
Very close.
Oh.
Night Tracks.
I almost said Night Tracks. Oh, my God. But I thought it was too close to Night Flight or whatever that
shit is. Well, that's what I said. I was like, was that the one that had Night Flight? But I guess not. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4 of those. So
not even a half point for hot tracks?
No.
Let's let the listeners decide if I should get a half point.
Okay. Well, we both got 8, so I am still 4 ahead of you because
Jesus.
That was 4 ahead from the first couple days. Get a study up. Take some more vitamins, Joe.
I can't take any more. I haven't pooped in 8 days. I don't know what vitamins do to you. That was a bad joke.
I don't know what vitamins do to you either.
I'll never know.
Well, that is it for this week. Don't know what we're going to do next week. Oh, here's something. I don't think we'll cover this next week, but let me give a very brief review. I saw the movie All of Us Strangers. Thought it was very good. I would recommend people see it, but there's lots of great 80s music used in the movie. So
love that. I didn't even know.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to do an episode about the music, but that will be coming at some point. There was a couple songs that I was not very familiar with.
Did you have to get out your phone and Shazam them?
I am not a rude, horrible person that would take out my phone in the movie theater. But why I said it's not going to be next week is because there's not a soundtrack listing on IMDb, which is insane.
They're waiting on you.
I guess so. I've got to fill it out for them.
I got to tell you, I don't think taking your phone, I think it depends on the context. You could have it on the lowest brightness level and you could have it shielded in a way that's not disturbing. I totally get where you're coming from. I just don't think it's so cut and dry.
Okay. Fine. And I will give myself credit because I was sitting in the very top row back in the corner. So no one would have been disturbed by my phone. But this is the same movie showing that I told you about where the gentleman in the very first row took out his phone many times.
Right. Yeah.
And it was very annoying.
See, that's an example of the wrong way to do it.
You're right.
Listeners, if you agree with me on this one, I think I should get a half a point on the quiz, right?
I'm not saying that I would never in a million years take my phone out in a movie theater, but it would be rare and I'd have to make sure that it was not disturbing to anybody else.
Yep.
Okay. Well, so join us back here next week.
For At the Movies.
Yeah. Well, I will take us out then. It's Warren Zevon's birthday coming up this week.
Yeah.
So I will leave you with be kind to yourself, be kind to others, be kind to the world. And in the great words of Warren Zevon, enjoy every sandwich.
Yum. Thanks for listening. Bye.